It's the two-point conversion with Bryce and Daniels, brought to you by Footballogy.com, the study of all things football.
All right, and we're live.
We're live. That's how you always start it off.
Here we, well, until, unless I got a little Bruce Buffer last time. But,
you did.
You know, I got a little, you know, UFC 204. I got a little out of control. But, yeah, we're live. Episode 11, I believe.
10. It's 10. We just talked about this.
I understand that.
Theater of the Mind thing. I see what you're doing.
Yeah, no, this is quite a milestone. Episode 10 of the Two Point Conversion Podcast. It's Bryce and Daniels. And it's brought to you, as always, our good friends over at Footballogy.com, FOOTBOLOGY.com. It's a study of all things football.
Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic website. Go check them out. They got articles, video, all that stuff. It's a great site.
Definitely. And I'll tell you another site that's a very solid site as well. It's where Levi's calling us from.
Yeah. We have on the line today, we have Levi Damian. He is the lead writer for silverandblackpride.com. That is the Oakland Raiders fan site for Super Bowl Nation. Last week we had Dave Halperin from bloggingtheboys.com, and my plan is to just kind of bounce around the league and have different guys from the different teams on.
If we can do that, that's going to be really awesome.
Yeah.
Really
yeah.
Cool.
So Levi's, I was reading some of your work this weekend, man. You do a really good job.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, man. So we talk a lot on this podcast about the culture of winning and teams having to learn how to win, basically the teams or the steps that teams have to take to transition from doormat to league-wide force. We mentioned several times last week about this being a landmark game for Oakland, the game this weekend against the Chiefs, and people around the country have started to notice the Raiders, and now you've got a game, and it's a late game, so it's one of the premier games of the weekend against a good division opponent, and how does your team respond to that? And not only did the Raiders lose the game, but they looked pretty poor in doing it. In your mind, does their performance in this game tell you where they are in this whole learning to win process?
No, absolutely. It definitely tells you where they are. I think in some regard it wasn't a big surprise, really, because, you know, they're – actually, what they did earlier in the season on offense was the biggest surprise of the season. I don't think anybody expected them to be putting up like 30 plus points a game the way they were doing. And by that same token, the defense was a little bit surprising at just how bad they were. And you were just kind of waiting for that other shoe to drop. You knew that the offense couldn't keep up that kind of pace, and they certainly couldn't continue to come to the rescue every game when the defense is giving up those kind of points. And so you end up facing a team like the Chiefs is probably the best team that they've faced this year, certainly the best defense. Some would say the Ravens were the best defense when they faced them, but Ravens lost three games in a row since then, so maybe they weren't quite as good as people thought they were.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were a playoff team last year. They won a playoff game last year. So the Chiefs are no slouch, and Andy Reid coming off a bye week is definitely, he's, I think, 16-2 in his career coming off a bye week. So it's a tough matchup when all those things come together.
Yeah, that's kind of what we were thinking last week. We kept mentioning that this was going to be the, you know, that game that kind of tells you where you are as a team. And I feel like Oakland now is in that kind of limbo between being one of the contenders, but they're not a pretender either. They're just kind of in between in there, and they still have some growing to do as a team.
Yeah, and I think that they will do some growing this year. I mean, they're going to get, for instance, they're going to get Mario Edwards back by midseason, and that will help things a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have a lot of people forget that they have almost an entirely new secondary and, like, linebacking core. Most of their guys, they're new. They weren't on the team last year. They only have one returning member of the secondary. That's David Amerson. And then they have Khalil Mack at linebacker. Everybody else is starting is new.
Right.
In that defensive backfield. So there's a lot of communication issues going on right now that should get better as they gel. And so it couldn't really get any worse. Honestly.
Right. Well, I don't know. I mean, it could get worse. You could be the Browns.
Or the Jets,
yeah. I'm expecting a little more out of Oakland this year. So with Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree, the Raiders have one of the best wide receiver tandems in the NFL. Can you tell me a little bit about each one of those guys and give me your opinion on where they stand league-wide as a pair?
Well, I think they're one of the better, as you said, I think they're one of the better starting duos in the league. Crabtree had a rough few years in his first 6 years with the 49ers. It's kind of like, I think the first couple of years he was his own worst enemy. Mm-hmm. I think he had a little too high opinion of himself. And then once that went, once he started to kind of like get himself together, he had a 1,000-yard season, but then he had Colin Kaepernick as his quarterback, and Colin Kaepernick, as we know, really faded away.
Yeah, that's not good for anybody.
he wasn't the receiver's best friend, that's for sure.
Right.
And so now he's in a much better situation coming into his second year after a pretty decent first year with Derek Carr. And he's playing the best football he has possibly his whole career. And so he's got that savvy veteran. He's always been a pretty sure-handed guy. He's got that savvy veteran thing going. And then Amari Cooper, he's just, I mean, he had a great rookie season. If you look at what he did numbers-wise, between him and the next receiver, was like he had like something like 500 yards more than the next guy down as far as rookie receivers were concerned. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Stephon Diggs who had the next most receiving yards. And he went to the Pro Bowl. You know, granted, it was as an alternate, so it's not like he was a surefire thing, but you could tell he had room to grow, and he's one of those types of receivers that he works on his craft. For instance, early in this season, one of the things that he was having even as early as like last week before the Chiefs games, one of the things he was having problems with is he couldn't keep his feet in bounds, which is something you wouldn't expect from a guy who was said to be so polished coming out of college.
Right.
That being able to, you know, his field awareness didn't seem like it should be an issue. But he was having issues with it, so he worked on through the week. And then in the game against the Chiefs, there were at least three instances where he was right along the sideline and kept his feet in bounds every single time. And I was like, wow. I mean, how did he in 1 week go from being a guy who could not manage to keep his feet in bounds to just like suddenly getting it? So you can see he just continues to get better. And so you get that. It's a good combination. You get the young guy who's improving, and he's got all the athletic ability that you want, and then the savvy veteran, sure-handed guy who's, you know, probably playing the best football he's played.
It's been fun watching Crabtree this year. It seems like every single one of his touchdown catches this year has just been an incredible catch. Like, he just keeps getting it, you know, jumping up to catch the ball or catching it right in the back of the end zone and tiptoeing for the touchdown. He's been incredible this year. As far as Amari Cooper is concerned, I've been watching him this year, and I haven't watched every single snap the Raiders have taken, but he seems to me to be a very good receiver, but I haven't seen, like, anything that says to me, this guy is going to be A.J. Green, or he's going to be Julio Jones. He's going to be the next big, unstoppable wide receiver. Have you seen that? Do you agree with that? Or do you think that's just something that's coming down the pipe a little bit?
I definitely would. I agree with you to the extent that I don't think that he's fully optimizing his abilities. I think one thing he lacks is a lot of those guys that you were saying have is he doesn't have a lot of fire. I mean, when you talk to him, he's a really low-key guy. He's very quiet. And there are some guys who are like that off the field, but when they get on the field, they're a completely different person. He tends to play that way. He tends to play the same way he acts. He just doesn't have that. I mean, you don't have to be a diva to be. He's like the antithesis of Michael Crabtree in that. Michael Crabtree is always like getting in guys' faces. He's so competitive, and you can see it. He fights for the ball, and he's like. He's of the mind that you know, no one can beat him. That's how he takes the field. But you just don't see that with Cooper. And it's almost like you're like, can't you see? You want to shake him. You're like, can't you see? You are so incredibly talented. There's no reason in the world that you shouldn't be able to just to dominate people the way that they do. He's not as tall as some of those guys that you mentioned.
Right.
So he's not gonna be that great jump ball guy that. Like you said, A.J. Green and Calvin Johnson, guys like that. He's not one of those big receivers that's going to win the jump balls. But certainly, I point to a guy like Steve Smith. And you won't find a guy who's more fiery than Steve Smith.
No, not at all.
That guy is 37, I think, right now, and he's still dominant because he has it in his heart that he's going to beat you every time he steps on the field, and that goes so far. If if Amari Cooper had it, even a shred of the kind of heart that Steve Smith had, he could, you know, the possibilities are endless. And since he hasn't developed that yet, if he ever will, that's where I think you're seeing it, where I'm seeing it, is that he's just like, there's just something missing, that he's just not quite there.
Maybe not on a week-to-week basis, but I've seen some fire in Amari Cooper at times. It fades in and out sometimes, but like you said, the pieces and the groundwork is definitely there for a very solid career for Amari Cooper. Of course, he put up huge numbers in Alabama. I want to talk a little bit about the running game with Murray in that situation. DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard. I mean, you got one guy who what I see from Richard is a guy that can catch passes out of the backfield. His blocking leaves a little bit to be desired, and I'm sure that's why Washington sees the field more. But I think that Richard is potentially, I don't want to say Bilal Powell, because that's not a good enough name to compare Richard to. What do you think about the run game or that running back situation as it stands right now?
You mean with Murray out?
Yeah, with kind of Washington and Richard alternating, but Washington's pretty much won that job with Murray out.
Well, I mean, last week Washington did carry the ball more, but the week before they had exactly the same amount of touches. It was like Washington had one more carry than Richard did, and Richard had one more catch mm-hmm. than Washington did. So they share it pretty evenly, and that's mainly because they're just about the same. They're just about the same running back. They're the same. They're the exact same size. They have a very similar running style. They both have very good hands. Although Richard lately has had a couple of weird drops here and there, I know he has better hands than that. It must be just be like a concentration thing or something. But they really like both running backs. But you look at these guys and they're not exactly what you would call every down backs. So they can share the load. But the other thing that's missing is that change of pace. Being that they're like twins on the field,
exactly.
You don't really have that change of pace, and that's why, you know, I've had people suggest to me that it's like have asked me the question, do you think it'd be better if they, you know, gave Latavius Murray less carries and made one of these guys the feature back, because, you know, every game they break off at least one like 20 plus yard run. And I said no, because mainly the reason that they're able to break off those runs here and there is because they just you have Latavius Murray kind of wearing them down, mm-hmm. and they get, you know, almost, I don't want to say lull into sleep or anything like that. But then you bring in this speed back, and all of a sudden it's like, and he's fresh. He's that change of pace, as they like to say, and that's why he's able to break off these big runs. And like each one of them have had at least one big run this season in a game. And with Latavius Murray out, you don't really have that. So last week you didn't see a lot of. I mean, they had their worst rushing game of the season. And that part of that was because it was such a wet day, and on a wet day like that, the Latavius Murray would have been a perfect back for a day like that. It's sort of like Spencer Ware had a great day against the Raiders mm-hmm. on Sunday, even though Jamal Charles was healthy. I don't think he was as much. It was an ideal back for those conditions, the way that Spencer Ware was.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes that happens. Yeah.
I certainly agree with that. I'm gonna touch on Spencer Ware and the defense here in just a second. What are your thoughts on Latavius Murray moving forward? I've actually heard a couple of reports that they're not that he's not the guy, but that the coaching staff is kind of phasing him out is what I heard probably about 2 weeks ago, I believe. Again, that's unconfirmed reports. I know that turf toe, and that's kind of a lingering, ongoing situation with Murray. But is he the guy moving forward, at least this season?
Well, I wouldn't say they're phasing him out. That, although, who knows, that might come to pass sometime in the near future. But when you look at it, Jack Del Rio, when we spoke to him in the off season, he never really spoke glowingly about Murray.
Mm-hmm.
He never like raved about it. And he could easily do that as a head coach. He'd just be coach speak and say, yeah, he's great, and we need him and stuff like that. He always seemed a little lukewarm on him.
That's kind of how That's kind of been my take on Murray as well. I mean, he seems formidable. He seems like an adequate running back, especially in that system. But he doesn't do. he doesn't punch all the boxes as far as up that in that upper echelon of running backs, but he's formidable at the moment.
Well, what you also look at in these types of situations, yeah, I mean they'll take what they can get. Their best combination right now, I think, is when Murray is healthy, and they to have him on the field. However, you look at guys like to Washington and Richard. And by the way, congratulations on saying his name correctly. I've heard too many times people say Jalen Richard, and I have to correct them. No, it's Richard. Mm-hmm. But anyway, them being these stocky 5'8", 200 pounds, they're basically they're Maurice Jones-Drew is what they are.
Right.
And Jack Del Rio drafted Maurice Jones-Drew and started him all those years in Jacksonville. So you could say he has a type. Jack Del Rio has a type he likes in running backs, and DeAndre Washington, Jalen Richard are that type. Latavius Murray is not.
That's
so perfect. If you think of it in that regard and how lukewarm you seem to be, like he's a free agent after this year, so I think it's definitely a toss-up whether he'd be back.
Well, the Cowboys are pretty set at running back this year. You guys want to trade for McFadden back?
Oh, that sounds like a lovely proposition.
Okay, so Daniels and I are both really big Derek Carr fans. We like Carr a lot. Can you give me a player comparison, active or retired? What other quarterback does Carr remind you of?
Oh, you know what? I'm kind of surprised that it's never even crossed my mind.
Never even thought about it? I think I've got a pretty good one.
No, it's never even crossed my mind.
All right, well, how about this? Daniels and I will give you ours, and you can respond to it.
Okay,
Daniels, go.
I'm going to go back to the Jack Del Rio topic, and, well, maybe not then. Mark Brunell.
Okay, I can see that a little bit.
He
right-handed Mark Brunell.
A bit of Mark Brunell. Maybe, I guess Bledsoe doesn't really fit.
No. He gets rid of the ball way faster than Bledsoe ever did. Mine is it's hard to compare players from different eras because the game is played so differently. Like, you're never going to be like, that guy plays like Ken Stabler ever again, because that's a different era. So not necessarily from a physical standpoint or the way he looks throwing the ball or anything like that, but just some of his intangibles and some of his traits, he reminds me of Troy Aikman. He's just got that kind of the leadership I see, and that's from the outside looking in.
That is a glowing recommendation.
It is. And then there's some throws that he makes that I'm like, that is a big boy NFL throw. Like that, he does some really impressive things with the ball. So I was just kind of wanted to throw that out there. Real quick, tell me two or three players people outside of Raider Nation don't know about, but they should.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to make me answer that question who I compare him to. I was sitting there thinking about it, and I was thinking, I was like, I came up with somebody.
Okay, go ahead.
And I was thinking Andrew Luck is not a bad comparison. And I don't want to say, because Derek Carr himself is his idol is Brett Favre, but I see him taking the same kind of downfield chances now and then that Brett Favre, but Brett Favre has that improvisational kind of gritty thing going that I don't think Derek Carr can reach. So I would say if you match the little bit of gunslinger with that sneaky athletic ability to escape the pocket and run for it when he needs to, I would compare him most closely to Andrew Luck.
Okay, that's pretty good. I like that one.
It's one of those things where I was like, wow, that's weird. I'd never even thought about who to compare him to. So anyway, to move on to what you asked me.
Two or three players people outside of Raider Nation don't know about, but they should.
I don't know.
See, to me, you mentioned one earlier with David Amerson.
Oh, well, I sometimes it's hard to know what I sometimes assume that other people are going to know about. Okay, David Amerson is a pretty good one because he was a former second-round pick in Washington, and he's after two full seasons, like two games into his third season, they cut him because, you know, like that his second season he was he gave up the most catches of any corner in football, and he just wasn't doing it in Washington, and they cut him after two. They benched him, and they cut him after two games. The Raiders, they waived him, and the Raiders signed him, pulled him off the waivers. And last year, he had the second most passers defended in the NFL behind Marcus Peters of the Chiefs. And he's kind of on, he's pretty much been on pace to do it again this year. A couple weeks ago, he was tied for the second most in the NFL in passes defended behind Marcus Peters. So yeah, he's a pretty dang sticky cover guy.
Right.
He had a rough week last week, but I think the entire secondary had a rough week against Alex Smith. But yeah, that's a good one. A lot of people might not know just how I think he had a Pro Bowl worthy season last year, and I don't think he was on anybody's radar in that regard outside of, you know, people who watched him every game the way that I did and the others who cover the Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
As far as somebody else, man, it's a
got an offensive lineman or a linebacker or something.
Well, I'm thinking about that, but like they've been, but it's one of those weird things where they've been kind of underachieving so much that it's just like, well, should I? I used to give a like Danico Autry was a guy last year who came up and played really well late in the season at the interior defensive end position. And he has a penchant for blocking balls at the line of scrimmage, and he does a decent job of rushing the passer. But for some reason, like he hasn't been, he's made a few plays here and there. But that whole unit, that front seven, has underachieved significantly this year for the Raiders so far.
And that can make it hard to pick out those top players.
They're starting a rookie middle linebacker, and I was going to say him as well, but I don't know. He's only started a few games, and I don't know how good he's going to be.
What's his name?
Corey James.
He's
a sixth-round pick out of Colorado State.
And he's getting a start up there in Oakland. That's,
yeah,
okay.
Well, Ben Heaney was the guy who started at middle linebacker the first two games, and it was a very bad idea. It's kind of ill-advised. They should have brought in a middle linebacker in the offseason and didn't. So they just decided they were going to start their fifth-round linebacker from the previous season, middle linebacker, and that didn't work out. Corey James looked pretty good in training camp, so he got the start, and he's played pretty well. He's played really well. He's certainly an upgrade from Ben Heaney, and he was one of the top two tacklers in his first two starts, and he looked pretty good, and he could do some pretty good things. So maybe Corey James would be somebody to look out for because he's I think Pro Football Focus said that he hadn't missed a tackle. In his first two starts, he didn't miss a single tackle, which is pretty impressive.
That is pretty impressive. All right, we're almost out of time for this segment. Really quickly, what's your take on the Raiders moving or potentially moving to Las Vegas?
Well, today the governor signed off, which was expected after the Senate and the Assembly all approved it by a majority vote, and now it basically goes to the owners. And major sticking point I could possibly see from the owners, aside from the obvious, just simply that they just don't want to put a team in Vegas,
right,
would be the fact that Sheldon Adelson has a lot of money invested in this, and he owns a bunch of casinos, and that could be one of those things where the NFL is like, no, that just doesn't sit right with us having a guy that owns casinos having his fingers in an NFL team, and so. That Mark Davis has said he's committed to them. He's talking like it's our future home, and I don't. There's a few things going on in Oakland right now with Ronnie Lott, a group that's headed up by Ronnie Lott, who's trying to make things happen to keep the team there by like buying the land that the stadium is on. And recently, Eddie DeBartolo is kind of coming to the mix as well, and so they're making one final push to keep him in Oakland. But this could happen as early as January. We could find out what their fate is.
Wow. I will say that in regards to the NFL saying no or whatever, I've heard Jerry Jones, Rooney, and John Mara all say that basically give their blessing that it's going to happen. And in my opinion, when those three guys say it's going to happen, it's going to happen. So
well,
I don't think
thing.
You have
that's
too
the
much
thing
problem
about
there.
Those blessings, and this is where I'm getting at, is that they gave their blessing on the idea of the Raiders moving to Vegas. But this was before Sheldon Adelson
got involved.
Came heavily into the picture with the, making such a big investment in thing, and that could change things.
Okay, that's really cool. All right, it's Levi Damian. Levi, do you want to give your tell our listeners where they can find your work?
Yeah, well, silverandblackpride.com. I'm on Twitter, at Levi Damien. That's L-E-V-I-D-A-M-I-E-N. And that's where you can find my stuff.
All right, cool. You guys go check them out, silverandblackpride.com. They're really, really good. Thanks a lot, Levi. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Have a good one, guys.
Yeah, you too.
You do the same. All right, so that was Levi over at silverandblackpride.com. A lot of pride in Oakland. It's going to happen.
They're going to Vegas.
But you just have to feel for that fan base and Oakland. But it's kind of like a foregone conclusion, I would say, at the moment. Raiders look good this year, too. To pick a year where, what are they, 4-2
now? They're not going to go till at least 2019. So we have a long time before they actually leave Oakland. But, yeah, that's unfortunate situation for them. But the city of Oakland doesn't want to support them with a new stadium and all that. And that's all the rage in the NFL right now is getting that new stadium.
You got to get the new stadium. It kind of is what it is. That's Minnesota.
Yes, exactly. It is what it is.
It's the two-point conversion with Bryce and Daniels. You can find us on footballag.com, iTunes, and Google Play as well.
Google Play, Facebook, the two-point conversion with the number 2.
We're up to 47th.
No, actually, we got the 44th on Friday morning.
We're climbing.
I was going to talk to you a little bit off air, but we can brainstorm on air. It's fine. I guess Saturdays and Sundays are a big podcast day, I would not have thought about. We fell from 44 to 202 over the weekend.
That's not good.
Now, what will happen is I'll post this tomorrow, and we'll jump right back into the 40s, right? Right. But over the weekend is a big
podcast. Saturday is a big podcast day.
Dude, we lost like 70 spots on Saturday and another 100 or whatever on Sunday. So we need to figure out something for some weekend podcasts.
Right?
I don't know.
Absolutely.
But
we'll talk about it.
Yeah, we got to figure something out.
In the meantime, though, there was a lot of action, both positive and negative. I will say this. I hit my dog of the week, and you are very pleased.
Yes.
I called it. I mean, not only did I call it. I mean, I nailed it bang on. I didn't know. My God. I mean, look, Dak is incredible. I'm not saying he's not. He is a fantastic quarterback. He does all the right things. He has zero shot, in my opinion, for Rookie of the Year. Zeke, give it to him.
Zeke,
wrap it up, and
incredible.
He's got a shot at MVP, in my opinion.
There's some other things that he's got a shot at. This is insane. First off, he is now ahead of pace to overtake Eric Dickerson for most rushing yards for a rookie.
And that was what was that with a 60-yard week one, 40, 50-yard week
one? It
was
bad week one, yeah. It was awful.
They almost threw it out the window, and now it doesn't look like he's going to go under 100 at all.
At all. And he's got an outside shot at 2,000.
Yeah.
That's a possibility. If they keep doing this, especially when you look at their schedule coming up.
Yeah.
They just went
off on Green Bay.
Right.
150,
off.
Whatever it was. Who's going to stop you?
Right. The Cowboys get Pittsburgh probably without Ben Roethlisberger with the meniscus tear, and then later in the season they have Minnesota. Everybody else, it's the Buccaneers, the Browns, the Eagles twice, who gave up 200 rushing yards on Sunday, like just on and on and on.
157 against a defense who hasn't allowed more than 50. I mean, can he win MVP? Can you give them both?
Sure.
Why not?
Sure. Rookie of the Year, MVP, Offensive Player of the Year. Yeah, give him all that.
He's leading in rushing yards.
Yeah,
by a wide margin.
By about 130 yards or something like that. Also, another neat little stat for a running back quarterback tandem as a unit. No two players in the history of the NFL have had a quarterback that had 4 consecutive games of 110 quarterback rating with a running back with 4 consecutive games of 130 yards rushing. That's not a rookie record. That's an NFL record as a tandem. That's never happened in the history of the NFL. And Zach and Deke have done that. So it's incredible. As far as Dak is concerned, he's played really well. I'm pretty sure I could have quarterbacked the Cowboys to a win yesterday because I can hand the ball off.
Yeah, I can hand the ball off. I can kind of do a little play action.
Yeah,
we can hit Bryce Butler wide ass open. Yeah. I mean, Green Bay did not look good.
No,
and
they didn't.
That's kind of a thing. We talked about it a little earlier in the season. I thought that might have gone away at home. I think they had that one solid game against Detroit in the first half. They haven't done anything else. They didn't look good against New York. They did not look good against Dallas. They have no business being favored at home or on the road. Green Bay is in trouble.
Green Bay is in trouble. You brought up that he had one good game against Detroit. Mm-hmm. Detroit gave up a quarterback rating of 126.7 to Case Keenum yesterday.
Yep.
So that him having a good game against Detroit is not, you know, do anything. I will say that we are going to talk about the Packers and Aaron Rodgers in particular coming up here after we get through our run of games here. Mm-hmm. I did a little film study, and I got a little information for you on what exactly is going on there with Aaron Rodgers.
Okay, well, how about we talk about what's going on in Dallas, because I've been right all along.
Yep.
I don't intend on being wrong. It's not what I do. There is no way in hell, and I've maintained this stance since week one, folks. I'm not just pulling this out of the air. I'm completely confident in what I say, and that's why I say it with the intent and the volume and sheer intensity that I do. There is no way in hell that you put Tony Romo in, period. Period. There's no discussion. The only reason there is a discussion on these sports shows is because you have to have something to talk about. And I guess
they're
we have
trying
to have
to create
something to talk
the discussion.
About. There is no discussion. You
okay.
do not pull Dak Prescott.
I agree with you. I am telling you, the coaching staff does not agree with you. I talk to people. I have a few little people, little birdies in my ear that are out there. I want to say Valley Ranch, but it's not. It's the Star in Frisco. The coaching staff has every intention of going back to Romo. I think right now the plan is actually to start Dak against Philly and then give Romo the easy start against Cleveland.
What do
Bring
you
him
think
back.
Is going to happen to the locker room when they do?
That okay, I don't know. I don't know any of that.
I do. I'll tell you this, the morale's going to go straight down. Everything, every positive that Dallas has going for them. And on the outside looking in, it's been fun. With the exception of, you have some of the most obnoxious fans there are, and some of the most least knowledgeable fan. Maybe this is a small sample as
no,
far as
I can tell you
in
what
the
that is.
Bar and in the just...
I can tell you what that is, because I have learned this from being a fan of the team that's not here,
mm-hmm.
okay, because I'm an Ohio State fan, so I have to deal with the it's your local fans. Like,
yeah.
If you're not a fan of the local team, the local fans are always the worst, most obnoxious, most least knowledgeable, et cetera, because
mm-hmm.
that's the ones you're dealing with on a daily basis. Trust me, there are moron
yeah,
Seahawks
I
fans
know.
And moron
I
Bengal
know.
Fans.
It,
and
it,
they're,
it,
fans in general are awful, just in general, a lot of times.
I just got to bite the bullet and get Sunday ticket, because this going to bars and going to... I don't want to plug anybody. I go
right.
to bars and go into places with Sunday
tickets. They have Sunday
so
ticket.
I can. It's all about the rotate, man. That's why I go to so I can sit in my chair and rotate. I'm not
yeah.
trying to watch Red Zone. I'm trying to watch literally every single game at once.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't do that. That's too much for me. I like Red Zone personally. That's my thing. I just want to throw one more thing out there real fast. Well, two things real fast. Anthony Brown, the sixth round pick
mm-hmm.
cornerback. Man. Mo Claiborne went down.
Down.
Did you notice?
Oh,
did you notice?
No one did.
Anthony Brown just stepped right
Literally
in.
Literally, no one in the room did after it was over. It
yeah.
was like, did he come back? No, he didn't come back. He went out with a concussion.
He went out
folks.
With a concussion. Yes.
Concussion protocol.
So,
and that was quite a hit. That was not one but two concussions
yeah,
that Mr.
Yeah.
Lee.
Yeah, he did. The second one,
the
one
yeah.
on the receiver, he kind of caught the guy.
It
wasn't
yeah,
even that hard
it,
of a
it
hit.
It didn't look like that hard of a hit.
Aikman was like, that was a vicious hit. And I'm like, what? It wasn't vicious. He kind of caught the guy.
Yeah,
he was like, here, let me
cradled him,
set you down gently.
I guess that's the power that he packs.
Right. Yeah, no kidding. The other thing I want to just dispel right now, I'm already sick of hearing this. Folks, the Cowboys cannot cut or trade Tony Romo.
That's not
They
happening.
Are $17 million over next year's cap right now, and his cap hit would accelerate into the cap if they cut or trade him. They'd be way over the cap. You would completely destroy the advantage you have of having a quarterback that's getting paid very little because you're still having to pay the old quarterback. They cannot cut or trade Tony Romo. He will be on this team through this season and next season. I guarantee it.
Tony's not
After that, they
Tony's not going anywhere for
right.
the
He might be the most expensive
future.
Backup in the league.
And is that why they're just dead set on starting him? Is because they can't? You can't have, as a coaching staff or as a managerial staff, you
no.
can't have that kind of money sitting on the
no,
bench.
No, they want to start him because he's a better quarterback than Dak Prescott.
I disagree. Well, right now, at this point in his career, I'm not saying 2 years ago, three, four, five.
Right,
right now, Dak Prescott is a better quarterback than Tony Romo.
Well,
Tony Romo,
we're going to find out.
Tony Romo is a liability to Cowboys Nation, and when he goes in and the games start becoming L's instead of W's, Oh, man, is the tide going to turn.
It'll be bad, and I think he'll have a short leash one way or the other.
Yeah.
They're not trading him, they're not cutting him, so get that out of here. That's not happening.
That said, how about this? You got the Eagles, who look average now.
What happened?
What happened? Is that what happens after a bye? Because if so, you better not take a bye. You better just play a scrimmage game or something.
Dude, I feel that way about the Cowboys. I'm like, can
hell?
We give up our bye? Because
seriously,
we're on a roll right
what
now.
What happened? And then after the Eagles, who, again, they're average. I think Dallas rolls over them. You go to Cleveland to play the Pee-wee Little League Browns. Then you've got the Steelers without Ben Roethlisberger now.
Yes.
Oh, that's a completely different team. You can take that 3.5 that I've been touting all year as the AFC. You can throw that out the window.
Right.
Light that ticket on fire.
Yeah.
$10,000 Antonio Brown on DraftKings went for 6.9. I don't even know how much he went for. He went for 39 yards. After that, it's the Ravens. Then it's the Redskins. I don't see any losses coming up for Dallas for a very long time.
The schedule is set up really nicely. That showdown with Minnesota late in the season, that looms large right now. That is going to be it's going to be a really, really good one. I will tell you, I went back. I checked out Minnesota's schedule previous to this, because if you looked at Green Bay's schedule previous to playing the Cowboys, mm-hmm. they haven't played anybody that was running the
ball. They haven't
played
anybody.
And Minnesota, if you go look, they haven't really played anybody that's real good at offense. Yeah. So I want to see Minnesota's defense.
The only team that we would have thought they have played is Carolina, who have been exposed and are now 1-5.
Yes, are 1-5, exactly. So let's get into this Redskins-Eagles game real fast. 27-20, Redskins win. First off, Kendra was right.
I mean, what are you going to start with that?
Kendra was right.
She got the win. Cousins did not look like the second coming of Prescott.
She just said you were going to get good Kirk Cousins. He was good enough.
He was all right. Philly's got some questions to be answered. I'm not saying they're in trouble, because they had a very hot start to the year, but there's no discussion or debate on whether the better quarterback is Dak Prescott or Carson Wentz at this moment, right now.
Right. Oh yeah. Who's playing better right now? No question. It's Dak Prescott. The Eagles have Minnesota this weekend, and then Dallas the weekend after. They have a chance to have four losses in a row now. I'm not saying Dallas is going to beat Eagles or Minnesota, but I'm just saying that they got two tough games coming up. Basically, they could be on a four game skid here before they turn around. Wentz kind of looked average, man.
He looked less than average. He had like 30 yards passing in the first half. Quarterback rating of 30.7. That's not average. That's well below. 11 completions on 22 attempts for 179. No touchdowns.
He had a couple of plays. I was watching the game. You know, I kept up with it. There was a couple of times where you still saw it. You were like, oh, okay, yeah. You see why he was drafted so highly and why everybody's touting him so much. But he wasn't playing as well. And those Philadelphia receivers were not getting
away. Well, I will say this, and that might have something to do with Philadelphia coming down to earth, might have something to do with the supporting cast just not being up to par, because they're not. Jordan Matthews, solid wide receiver. After that, it goes down in a hurry. Nelson Aguilar, Dorial Green-Beckham, who we feel should be better than he is. You got Zach Ertz coming off back from injury. Wendell Smallwood in the backfield, along with Ryan Matthews, who's, he's adequate, folks.
He's okay.
Let's
You're missing the one player that's making the big difference here.
Darren Sproles?
No, Lane Johnson.
Whoa.
Lane Johnson, the right tackle, is suspended 10 games for performance-enhancing drugs. This is the first game that he missed. And Ryan Kerrigan...
5 sacks.
Yeah, Ryan Kerrigan, he smelled blood in the water, man. Like, he's fresh meat. This kid right here, I'm going to abuse him. I can't even remember the name of the guy. Vitaly, something like that, came in to play right tackle for Lane Johnson. And Ryan Kerrigan just... He ate him like Zeke. He's just giving me the spoon. Just ate him
2
up.
2 sacks for Kerrigan, officially.
Yes, that's the big game there that... the big personnel thing that really affected the Eagles there, and he's gone for 10 games, so they're gonna need some help over there, and you really wonder how much that's gonna affect things with Wentz and
all
that.
You don't have time to throw the football, especially with an offense like Philadelphia's, you're gonna have to seek resolutions elsewhere.
So Redskins now. What, 4-2?
4-2.
4-2.
Washington's 4-2.
And Eagles are 3-2. The NFC East is the only division of football that does not have a team with a losing record.
Coming from an era of the NFC Least, and now
this. Now it's the NFC Beast.
Other than New York.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
The Cowboys look really good.
Look,
and Redskins have looked good recently. Philly and not New York are kind of falling off a little bit. New York had a big game, but
I don't care. New York looks bad, and I maintain that stance. One game from Odell Beckham is not going to change that.
Right.
But I am going to say this. I said it last week. I'm going to say it again this week. The Cowboys are not the second best team of the NFC. They are the best team of the NFC, and I do not care that Minnesota hasn't lost a game.
All right. Well, there you go. You got hot sports opinion right there from Daniels. Let's move on to the Chargers 21-13 over the Broncos. Broncos.
Quick shout out, my boy Matt Jones, 16 carries, 135 yards.
Oh yeah, Matt Jones went crazy in Washington. They gave up 200 rushing yards to Washington. The Eagles gave up 200 rushing yards to the Eagles.
Where are we going?
Chargers 21-13 over the Broncos.
Oh yes, Thursday night football, and once again, just an atrocity. Look, if your team plays on Thursday night, you should just probably go to sleep.
Yeah,
it's
no
been
kidding.
Bad, folks. It's been
Simeon,
bad.
Trevor Siemian had 4.6 yards per completion.
Yeah.
Do you know how bad that is?
I mean, that's less than Zeke's average per rush.
Per rush, yes, yeah. That you're right. That is god awful. Case Keenum, give you some comparison, had 10 yards per completion in the same game. Matt Stafford was like 9.5 yards per completion. Dak is usually over 8 or 9 yards per completion. 4.6 yards per completion is absolutely atrocious. So the question is,
quarterback rating,
has he come back down to earth?
Quarterback, I think there's no question he's come back down to earth. Quarterback rating of 23.3 against an adequate at best San Diego defense. Once again, this was a 1-4 football team. Don't even talk to me about Case Keenum. I'm very upset. We went Tavon Austin instead of Kenny Britt. I looked at Kenny Britt. We're
going to
talk about, 200.8 turns into about 228.
Right.
I went over 200 points, folks, for the first time this year. I'm very happy about that, but no Kenny Britt for me. As far as Denver goes, I mean, they had that 4-0 start. It's now back down, completely back down to earth at 4-2, and just lost to San Diego.
Yeah.
That's just all.
I know. The way you said that, it just kind of threw me. Like,
you just lost to San Diego.
Yeah.
C.J. Anderson can't get anything going. Devontae Booker, he is a solid threat on the ground. But if you can't get the guy to block, I mean, what good is he going to do? And you can't get that guy to block.
Right. got a good point, man.
I mean, Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, you've got offensive threats. You've got defensive weapons as well.
Well, yeah.
Obviously.
Got some of the best defensive personnel in the league. So, are the Broncos fool's gold?
I think so.
You think so?
I think so.
So, do you see them as one of the teams that starts out hot and then just fails to make the playoffs entirely? Or are they a team that makes the playoffs on just based on their hot start and then just does nothing?
I don't think the hot start's going to do it. They're going to have to show some
get
kind of back
together.
Yeah, because Oakland, Kansas City, I'm writing San Diego out. They've got too many injuries. But Oakland and Kansas City, Oakland's 4-2, Kansas City's 3-2, and now they get Jamal back, and Jamal's a massive part of that offense.
Right.
Especially when you throw in Spencer Ware. He's a double-edged threat out of the backfield. And the run game, he also plays as a decoy for Jamal. The wide receivers need some work, but Kansas City's going to be there late. But when you look at the schedule, so I think this next game against Houston is going to really tell a lot about these Denver Broncos, especially the way that Houston found the win last night. And we talk about teams that are ready to win. I don't know if Houston is ready to win, but Brock Osweiler at least thought he might be ready to win last night with C.J. Fedorowicz. But in Denver, it's Houston next, followed by, hey, guess what? They get the Chargers again.
Okay.
Right after Houston, and then the Raiders, Saints, Chiefs, Jags. It's not the most difficult schedule, but I think Denver's got some problems, and I think they need to address them.
How quickly before you yank Siemian and go to Paxton Lynch?
That's the question, but Paxton Lynch did not look good.
No, he didn't. But I mean, he's the young first-round pick. I'm just curious if you personally would go to that anytime soon.
I like Lynch.
You like
Lynch. I mean, I've made no reservations about that fact. I liked him in college. I like him now. I think he probably still needs work. But with those offensive weapons, with those Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, those are two huge weapons. And
right.
He had similar threats at Memphis with, I want to say Mose, and I'm not going to be able to come up with the names. It's been a year and a half.
Yeah, there's
but
no
he
way
had,
I remember.
He had big-time weapons in Memphis.
Okay, so... You're going to Paxton Lynch. I think they stick with Trevor Siemian a little longer. Are the Chargers a potential rebound playoff contender?
Nope. Too many injuries, man. Too many injuries. Way too many injuries.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I've seen the Chargers do this too many times. They look like crap. They start slow. All of a sudden, Phillip Rivers catches fire. He's throwing to the ball boys and like the towel boys and whatever. It doesn't matter. They're still scoring touchdowns, and they end up sneaking to the playoffs. I'm going to go ahead and call it now. Chargers make the playoffs.
Wow. You want a hot take. One of the hottest you can... I mean, you're just going out on a limb
can't
on
even
the
touch
show.
It, so
hey, you can't. They're two and Bryce. They're 2-4.
I know they're 2-4.
They're in a division with Oakland, Kansas City, and I mean Denver is what they are, but they're 4-2 right now.
I'm just throwing
two
it out.
And way
I'm
too
just,
injured.
I'm just throwing it out. There.
I mean, no Keenan Allen.
You can swat it back. That's fine.
No,
Danny Woodhead.
Danny Woodhead.
You just keep
saying,
them off.
I was about to say
there.
Ryan Matthews. I mean, you got Antonio Gates back.
He hadn't been there for a while.
He hadn't been there, yeah. Hunter Henry. That's a bright spot for San Diego. Other than that, who are you throwing to?
It doesn't matter. I feel like
it does matter. It matters a lot. I mean, you got that's Travis Benjamin and Tyro Williams.
Yeah.
That's who you're in for, too. Dontrell Inman, one catch for 11 yards. Not a chance.
Not a chance.
San Diego's right. In trouble. Denver's in trouble as well.
All right. Let's move on to the Seahawks, 26-24 over the Falcons, the only other good game of the weekend, basically.
This was a good game, and that was pass interference.
No, it was blatant
pass interference.
Not even kind of close. Something else we're going to get into here in a little while on the pass interference thing.
If you say what I think you're going to say, we will fight in the studio. There is...
We're going to get to it in a little while when we get done running through these games.
Oh, no. It's what I'm talking about is about to happen in about 15 seconds.
Oh, Kristen Michael still being average?
I swear to God. 18 carries, 64 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Give me that YPC.
He's picking up about, what, 3.8, 3.6? But he's breaking off runs when he needs to. He is...
Garbage?
No.
He's hot
absolutely
garbage?
Absolutely not.
He's absolutely awful.
Out of your mind.
He's awful, awful running back. I hate that guy. I don't know why. I have hatred for that guy. Seattle with the comeback.
Yeah, and a lot of it was Russell Wilson, but it wasn't Doug Baldwin this time. They are finally finding Jimmy Graham, and I think that's going to be big moving forward for Seattle. They're finally learning how to use that big name tight end, but that big threat. I mean, Jimmy Graham, you remember what he used to do in New Orleans. He was a beast. He's a monster. He was up there, fantasy terms, with Polar Bear.
Yes.
Oh, I love
yes.
Polar
Bear. We're going
to
get to that.
He was up there with Polar Bear week to week as far as pricing goes, and then he went to Seattle and just kind of the forgotten man until now, and I think Jimmy Graham's going to be used more moving forward. He had 9 targets, led the team.
Someone not getting much usage didn't get much on Sunday, Tevin Coleman.
Oh, Tevin Coleman was
just nothing.
Non-existent.
He was non-existent in the
game. 2 targets.
I asked you last week if he could be consistent with all that craziness he did the week before, and you're like, yeah, you're good to go.
Well, it depends on how they use him. I didn't know Toy Lolo was going to go 3. Okay, first of all, folks, let's not make any qualms about this. And we were talking about this shenanigans over the weekend where I watched all the games, all everybody that was there. There was a theme on Sunday, and it was, who the F is that Sunday? That's what it was. It was, who the F is that Sunday? There were so many teams with so many players that caught touchdown passes and had these big yards and big plays that nobody knows who they are.
Right.
Nobody knows who they are.
Right.
Even the most hardcore of football and fantasy fans, nobody knows who they are.
Yeah, they don't have
Toy Lolo was one of them. Julio Jones, clearly, he's
big
a
day.
Guy.
Yep. Big day for
Julio.
I mean,
it was a pretty big day, and I don't know if he catches that last one, but it's pass interference. 7 for 139 and a touchdown is what Julio ended up on.
I think this is the only game of the weekend that I can say with confidence both these teams are going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, they are.
That's the only game for the whole weekend that happened that I think with confidence I can say both these teams are going to be in the playoffs. Good game. That was a good game to watch. Let's move on to the Titans, 28-26 over the Browns. I included this game in there because we're kind of paring it down and we're not talking about every team now. But... are the Titans the best team in the NFC South now?
In the NFC South.
Or AFC South. Wow.
Marcus Mariota's a thing.
He's getting better.
And I've been saying that for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah,
6,100 if you paid for it. Thing with him in fantasy terms, he had so much on the ground. And DeMarco Murray, we're going to pass over that. But Marcus Mariota's a thing. Even when he doesn't throw to Delanie Walker, he learned how to find other targets this week. Kendall Wright in particular, 8 mm-hmm. catches for 133 and a touchdown. Are they the best in their division?
I mean, it's them or Houston.
I
kind of feel like their defenses are pushes between Tennessee
it's
and
a coin
Houston.
Flip. It's a
and
coin
I,
flip.
And I like Tennessee's offense a little more than Houston. I think you might see Tennessee go win the AFC South this year. So that's one of the,
with an 8-8 record. I mean, this could be
a
division winner with a 7-9.
Right.
You might
be
looking at
a
losing
division.
It's not.
Yeah.
Jacksonville on the comeback. Don't sleep. Don't sleep.
Okay, get out of here with that nonsense. What about Cody Kessler?
Okay, San Diego. Cody Kessler looks a lot better than we give him credit for.
He's not that bad.
He knows how to find yards. He can throw touchdown passes. He's not great. He didn't throw any picks.
Right.
And he likes Terrell Pryor. Who doesn't like Terrell Pryor? 9 catches on 13 targets for 75
Browns
and 2.
The Browns are a really, really young football team,
mm-hmm.
and they have a lot of draft picks over the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Like a lot of draft picks. I almost wonder if this whole Billy Bean Moneyball style thing that they're trying to do in Cleveland's going to end up working.
Look,
like, we're going to get 74 draft picks. We're going to pick 19 quarterbacks out of those 74 picks, and one of those quarterbacks is going to be a contender. And they may have hit something on this Cody Kessler kid, Terrell Pryor, just getting better and better and better.
Look, folks, I've seen worse football teams than the Cleveland Browns this year.
Yes,
they
I
are
have
not
too.
An 0-6 team. Every time I see this record, and I know we talk shit every week about them and rag on them, but just looking at this 0-6, it doesn't make sense because they play better than that on a week-to-week basis.
They do.
And Cody Kessler, 336, two touchdowns, no picks. Maybe it has to do with the defense, the lack of running game, because Isaiah Crowell's not getting it done at all. You want YPC, 9 carries for 16 yards. Those are Donald Brown numbers. But Terrell Pryor, Gary Barnage, Duke's getting involved out of the backfield. They got baby. They have pieces. That's all I'm saying.
They got a few
pieces.
They
have pieces. They're about to get 72 more of them.
Yeah, exactly, because they have 72 draft picks. I got a buddy, huge Cleveland fan. He's a Indians, Cavs, Browns, and Cavs won the NBA championship. Indians are up 3-0, and I was like, man, wouldn't it be crazy if Cleveland goes that long without a championship, and then the Cavs and
Steve Amiosic, heavyweight champion,
right,
from Cleveland,
right? And Steve Amiosic happens too, and he's like, yeah, and the Browns win the Super Bowl. What?
Cricket?
Get out of here with that nonsense, man.
It's the most drastic turnaround in NFL history, folks.
Yeah.
They're going to go 9-7, starting at 0-6. Cleveland makes the playoffs.
The playoffs.
No.
They're in the AFC Championship game. Kessler goes down. Robert Griffin has to come in and save the day and makes it to the Super Bowl. Calling it now.
God, I love football.
It's so much fun. All right, let's move on to the Giants 27-23 over the Ravens. What the hell is wrong with the Ravens?
What happened to Baltimore? They were looking more than formidable, more than average and adequate in the first quarter, in the first half, and it just
all
fell apart.
Now I'm not sure they're
going
to make the playoffs.
I don't think they are. They're 3-3 now. And
I mean, they might make the playoffs on the strength that the Bengals aren't very good. The Browns are, doing what the Browns are doing. And Roethlisberger is going to be out 4 to 6 weeks.
Roethlisberger being out's a big loss.
I mean,
Pittsburgh.
Baltimore might make
up those tickets. Yeah. Try to get some refunds if you got 3.5.
Find
or
a sucker
to
buy one from you.
And you know how much I was touting the Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Even last week, massive loss. Especially Landry Jones. We'll get to it. Baltimore, 3-3 now. I think a big part of that is Steve Smith. I really do. You get Steve Smith back, it changes the offense. It changes the offensive complexion.
Right.
Of course, Terrence West was able to run against New York, too, so I really don't know. I don't know. I got nothing. You make go into the locker room, make some halftime adjustments. I got nothing.
You got nothing.
Terrence West, 23 carries, 87 yards, two touchdowns. And they used him out of the backfield this time. 4 catches for 36 yards. Mike Wallace, 4 for 97, no touchdowns. No touchdowns again. I think that's the second straight week for Joe Flacco without any touchdowns. And on the opposite side, you got to be able to stop Odell Beckham Jr. If you can't do that,
what
you're
the hell,
222
man.
Yards off 8. Okay. Yes, he's a very good receiver. He's in the top tier, maybe lower top tier. For me, 10 targets, 8 catches, 222 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Man, just go out there and do your job. Are you going to go to the net every single time this year? Celebrations that this guy does.
I'm fine with that.
I'm not at all. This gets old. It's already old.
To me, him crying on the field about stuff and throwing fits, I hate that. But when somebody's out there having fun and just you can poke fun at yourself,
so
like
the
net thing, I'm fine with that. Personally, it doesn't bother me. I still don't think Odell Beckham is really a true number one legit threat every week.
Mm-hmm.
He gets shut down too often for me on that. But he had a huge game.
He did have a huge game. What happened to Sterling Shepard?
He's not catching the football.
He's not.
They're throwing it to him, and catches he was making early in the season, he's not making now. They got a little tape on the guy. And
Sammy Coatesitis.
Okay, I wasn't gonna just throw shade at Pittsburgh players, but whatever. God, you're just killing me on it. So I want to talk about the Hail Mary at the end.
Okay.
Did you see the replay of the Hail Mary? Did you watch the Hail Mary?
I did not watch the Hail Mary. I was
okay,
invested in three or four games.
Flacco gets the ball, gets the pressure and rolls out to the right like they always do on the Hail Mary to buy time. And like some type of a, like as if there was an incredibly hot woman right in the middle of the end zone, all the players just went right over there and stood right in the middle, and there was a receiver, and I don't know which one it was, a Baltimore receiver hanging out right by the pylon, and Flacco, because he wasn't that far away, they were like 30 yards away, Flacco could have fired that over to him, touchdown, Ravens win. Like, there was nobody near this guy, and Flacco heaves it over into the middle, and it gets knocked down, and whatever, they don't win. Flacco's got to see that. Like, that's a win. That's a win. You did it. I found that to be very frustrating. Because I want the Giants to lose, because I'm a Cowboys fan.
Well, of course. I think you see that a lot, too. The traditional Hail Mary, we're just going to throw out the playbook and throw out everything on that last play, and
yeah.
I don't care who's open where. I'm just going to heave it 65, 70 yards into the end zone.
That's the thing, is he didn't have to throw it that far. It was only like a 45-yard throw. Like, it wasn't that far of a throw. And, man, I'm telling you, he could have. I don't remember who the receiver was, but he could have hit him. There's nobody anywhere near him. It'd have been an easy touchdown. Baltimore could have won that game. They didn't. I'm gonna put you on the spot. If we're gonna say one of these two teams makes the playoffs, which one?
Baltimore.
Baltimore.
New York has zero chance.
Zero chance.
They are in the NFC East.
They are.
With a rejuvenated Washington Redskins, the best team in the NFC, and a Philadelphia Eagles team that's on the decline. But New York has zero chance.
Okay, well, there you go. Texans 26-23 over the Colts. Huge comeback for the Texans.
Like I said, I think Brock Osweiler learned how to win, and we've talked about that a couple of times on this program.
Right.
Quarterbacks and teams in general learning how to win, and they talked about it, as much as I hate Collinsworth, they talked about it on Sunday Night Football. It wasn't a good football game, but it was entertaining. They talked about it on there that Osweiler, this might be a turning point in his career where he learns how to win. I'll tell you who learned how to win is Lamar Miller. I mean, my God.
Do you think that anyone on that team has learned how to spell Fedorowicz?
I love Fedorowicz. I had him in literally every single Sunday/Monday team. And I wanted him overall. I just couldn't pull the trigger. 2,500. We talked about him last week. I'd said something on Thursday.
No, I wrote down in my rights here, my notes, you were right on the tight end. I wasn't going to go try to spell it myself,
yeah.
So I just wrote the tight end.
Fedorowicz.
Yeah, it's Fedorowicz.
Fedorowicz.
Yeah, that makes totally... Yeah, it just sounds
okay,
exactly like it's spelled.
I come from European football, so we deal with a lot of interesting names there as well.
Yeah, no, it's all nonsense. Lamar Miller had a career day.
Career day, and I wish I would.
That's probably
taken
the best
the
game
advice.
Of his career.
It is. 24 carries, 149 in the touchdown, and then the touchdown on the receiving.
What
end
was that?
With 29
yards. How did every single person from the Indianapolis Colts touch that guy three times, and he still scored a touchdown?
Seven people he ran through.
I don't understand that. It doesn't make any sense at all. You dress 45 guys for a game. All 45 guys, Colts touched him.
Yeah,
and he still scored. It was ridiculous.
Still,
absolutely ridiculous. And speaking of how bad that team is,
who's Chester Rogers? Speaking of how bad, who? Houston or Indianapolis?
Indianapolis.
Okay.
But I don't know who Chester Rogers is, man. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. Dwayne Allen went out as well. Chester Rogers led the team in receiving yards. They have T.Y. Hilton. He led the team in the receiving yards, 63 yards. And Jack Doyle came in with the silver medal, 53.
The unstoppable Jack Doyle.
The unstoppable. Frank Gore just keeps on trucking.
Yeah.
106 yards.
Fountain of youth on that guy. Luck is the new Romo. That's what I took from this game.
That's a good analogy.
Luck is the new Romo, a extremely talented quarterback who is just surrounded by just crap. Either the running game works and you got this good running back, but your receivers can't get open, or both of those things are happening fine, but your offensive line can't give you time, or all of that's happening and you got the offense working good and you're scoring 30 points a game, but the defense is giving up 33 points a game. It's the stuff that Romo had to deal with early in his career, Luck is having to deal with now. He's getting a lot of the boo birds coming out after him and stuff. It's not fair, and I wish more fans would get more educated on how much of a team sport football really, really is.
I mean, you're right about that, but look, it's just not going to happen in a long, large scale, and he's going to take the brunt of that, especially
when
he goes back to Indianapolis.
Yes, he is.
And then coming from a quarterback like Peyton Manning the decades and the years before.
But you have to understand that they had Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne and Edgerrin James and Joseph Addai.
Edgerrin James.
Yeah. So they had all these players, and you know, he's not getting the same thing. Dallas Clark. Oh, man.
Oh,
I love me some Dallas Clark.
Of course.
Love me some Dallas Clark. So we're going to move on to the Lions 31-28 over the Rams. 2-3-3 football teams. two kind of just average teams, but the Rams, I mean, I guess they're still potentially in playoff contention.
Ladies and gentlemen, as far as the Rams go, they are who we thought they were.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if is this sustainable for Case Keenum?
No.
So he can't do that again.
I'm not saying he can't do it again, but look, I mean, Detroit, I'll tell you what is the thing. The thing that we need to take away from this game, at least from a fantasy perspective on the daily side, is start the quarterback that's playing Detroit. Because it's happened multiple times.
Right,
now.
Right.
Multiple
start the
times
quarterback
now.
That's playing. That's actually.
I mean, if you're
going
to tell me that Kenny Britt can go for 136-2, I just want to throw up. Because I looked at him, 7 catches, 136, and 2 touchdowns. No. I'm telling you, Detroit has a serious problem stopping the pass, especially when you look at what they did to Todd Gurley. 14 carries, 58 yards. The reason he only had 14 carries is because Case Keenum threw 27 for 32. Not only did he throw for 321 yards with a quarterback rating of 88.5, 3 touchdowns, he had 5 incompletions.
That's a total quarterback rating, by the way, what you're reading there. His passer rating was 126.7. So if you're comparing to the number you usually hear, the 158.3 is perfect. So 126.7 is really good is the passer rating. They have a new rating, the total quarterback rating, which is not on the same scale. 88.5 is excellent for a total quarterback rating. So just make sure that the fans.
No, absolutely. Thank you, ESPN, for that.
Yes. Golden Tate.
On the opposite side. Yeah, I knew this was going to happen.
I mean, you've been.
Of course I have. That's half of his yards.
Were you thinking about pulling a little Nancy Kerrigan during the halftime? Were you like hiring somebody?
Tonya Harding?
Tonya
Harding?
Just a little. Just go ahead and bust that kneecap real quick. And,
oh, man. I mean, that's half of his yards all season long.
Right.
He has 299. That's more than half of his total yards this season.
Yeah, he hasn't been very good, but they started to find him. I thought the Rams' defense was better than that, but they gave up a lot of yards to Tate. Stafford had a ridiculous game. I think his quarterback rating was actually higher than Case Keenum's quarterback rating. So big game for the Lions. They won.
Yeah,
they stay.
4 touchdowns.
This is
for
so
Stafford.
Weird, but they stay in playoff contention.
That is weird.
It's
They're
weird.
Not
both,
good.
Both of these relatively bad football teams are in playoff contention right now.
No.
They're in contention. I'm not saying they're making it. They're in.
No, I'm not going to live in a world where the Los Angeles Rams, the middle school, junior varsity, I apologize to Rams and Los Angeles and the entire state of California. I'm not going to live in a world where the JV Los Angeles Rams are in playoff contention. No.
Okay. Well, you might have to kill yourself.
They're 3-3 along with Arizona. There's no way you can tell me they look better than Arizona. Seattle's winning that division. They're 4-1.
Who was their one loss?
Stop it.
To the JV
Stop
Rams.
It.
To the JV
Stop
Rams.
Stop it.
All right, guys. That's going to wrap up all the games that we're going to talk about today.
Can Golden Tate continue? What do we expect from Golden Tate moving forward? Because Marvin Jones Jr. has kind of been, I'm not going to say phased out, but he had 10 yards. He did have a touchdown.
Right.
He had 2 catches for 10 yards on 6 targets.
Do you think that it's just the pendulum swinging the other way?
I really
don't
know.
They were double teaming Golden Tate start the season.
Now,
and then Marvin Jones kind of went nuts, so now they're shading it more his way, so they're going to Golden Tate. You might see a little bit. When you have 2 solid receivers like that, and you have a quarterback capable of getting to either one of them, getting the ball to either one of them, you're going to see that where the it's going to ebb and flow based on how they choose to attack the team or how defenses choose to try to cover it up. So I would say that both of those two, Golden Tate and Marvin Jones, are risky starts for the rest of the season because you don't know how the defense is going
to
play it.
Yeah, something to keep an eye on moving forward. I was wondering that same thing myself. Also, I know Justin Forsett just came into the offense. I'm sure they're using some time to get him back on track as far as football terms go, but Zach Zenner was the guy in the backfield. 14 carries, 58 yards. I like Zenner. I don't have anything against Zenner. He's not an NFL's quality running back.
No, he's not.
It is going to be interesting to see what the running situation is moving forward for Detroit, but definitely keep an eye on Golden Tate and Marvin Jones Jr. Anquan Boldin could be a thing now as well.
Him and Frank Gore need to start an old-timers team.
For real. Seriously, you could add Larry Fitzgerald. Steve
Brady can quarterback it.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, let's do this.
All right,
guys, we're going to move on to a little bit of something that personally frustrates me. It involves part of the Packers-Cowboys game from this weekend, but it actually involves all of the Packers games this weekend. And it's I don't know if I want to call it dishonest media talk, because I don't know that they're necessarily being dishonest so much as they're just intentionally being ridiculously vague about something so that they don't have to actually – remember Madden? Madden used to actually teach – People like fans like you and I who knew how the game worked, it was frustrating for us. We're like, yes, thank you. I know what a handoff is. But
oh, now you see the reason Madden made he went through the hole instead of around the hole. If he goes around the hole, he does it good.
Yeah. But Madden made football more popular, and you have to keep in mind that when you were 10 and didn't understand football that well, Madden was awesome. You got tired of him when you were 16 and you understood the, you know what I mean? And so they're doing something that drives me crazy, and I keep seeing this, and this isn't the only example of this. It's just the most recent one I've seen. This, oh my God, the Green Bay Packers offensive line is incredible. Look how long Aaron Rodgers has to go.
It's sensationalized.
They're doing it
all the time.
They're doing it on purpose.
I think they are too.
Teams have figured out that if you keep Rodgers in the pocket, don't let him escape the pocket, his quarterback rating plummets. His quarterback rating when he throws outside the pocket is like 140 or some insane number, and it's like 92, which is still a good quarterback rating, but it's not insane. And so teams have figured out, we're just going to keep this guy in the pocket. We're going to mush rush. We're just going to make him throw. We're going to clog up a bunch of lanes. We're going to have, you know, we're not going to blitz. We're going to have 7 or 8 defenders in coverage. We're going to do it with fat. We're not going to have a lot of linebackers on the field. We're going to do it with fast, you know, cover guys. And it's taken away what Rodgers does really well, and he is very, very much right now struggling with that. You can see it on his face. You can see it on his play. You can see it in his numbers. He's struggling with that, and you hear, like, Troy Aikman kept saying, well, the Cowboys pass rush isn't getting to Rodgers. And I'm going, I know he knows better. He's a freaking Super Bowl MVP. I know he knows better. But he just goes, oh, well, you know, the Packers, the Cowboys pass rush has got to get better. And that really drives me crazy. There's a lot of things that they do, that these announcers do that. But I guess what I'm trying to say is educate yourself a little bit.
Well, so let me ask you this. Are they trying to, is there a conspiracy at foot to dumb down the overall, the generalized fan, the general fans of the NFL?
No, it's just you actually have to do work and actually have to prep to explain to people what a two-man under defense is, because that's what everybody's running against them, okay?
It's a two-man. But we know this. What I'm saying is the NFL as a brand, as a corporation, is going to benefit, and they are, if we're going to talk conspiracy corner, folks, by a uneducated, beer-swilling, commercial advert eating up fan base that hoots and hollers and doesn't know what they're talking about.
I mean, you're right.
I don't know.
You're right that they could that could be a
casting a bigger net.
Right.
Is.
You're right from that perspective, and I mean, it's possible. I think it's laziness by the announcers themselves. Mm-hmm. That's what I think, and especially when you go watch. God, please, if you listen to anything I say during this entire podcast, please listen to this. Stop listening to these stupid fake argument morning shows. Stop. Screaming A. Smith and Skip Brainless and all of the. Stop it. It's fake. They're told before the show, you're arguing the against, battle it out. It's fake. Stop listening to that crap. It's just crap. And if you listen to that stuff, you see that it's not about educating the football fan and having more educated football fans. It's, like you said, it's about just the laziest, most least common denominator thing that they can possibly put out there, and it really, really drives me crazy. And I was just going insane this weekend. The Cowboys pass rush just can't get to Rodgers. I'm like, I can see. I don't even need to do any film study. I can see they're not trying.
Yeah, they're not trying.
They were trying to keep him in the pocket. That's all they were trying to do. Drove me absolutely crazy. We're going to move on to the scouting tip of the week. We missed this last week because we were behind on the show. We went a little long with Dave Halperin. The scouting tip of the week this week is learn route combinations. There are several. I'll give you just a few, and you can look it up if you want to. Smash, dagger, switch, 86, and the curl flat combination. They are used in different situations to beat certain types of defenses, and when you learn those, you can get to where you start seeing them actually during the game, and it'll really change the way you watch the game, because you'll start to see what defense is being played and how the offenses are choosing to attack it.
Bryce, I'll tell you this especially as well. A lot of people have asked me, because, yes, I love NFL. I love American football, whatever you want to call it. Love it, absolutely. Right. However, I am also a huge advocate, if not ambassador, for the beautiful game of what Americans call soccer. And I say that in quotation marks, what I call European football, football, whatever you want to call it. However, one of the reasons that I got so ingrained into this sport is because FIFA, the video game.
Right.
Madden does the exact same thing. And FIFA allows you to learn the beautiful game and
right.
the triangle passing and all sorts of X's and O's, basically, of soccer. You can do the exact same thing with Madden.
You can.
You can see those plays. You can run them. You can see how they work. You can put them against different defenses. And you can use that game as almost a training not method, but a training
a tool. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
With your... whatever it is, whether it's sports betting, whether it's fantasy, whether it's you just want to learn the game more and become a more knowledgeable football fan, you can use that as a training tool and learn. Not only can you learn routes, the smash, dagger, switch, fly pattern,
the combinations,
whatever there
are,
the button hook, whatever. You can also learn defenses as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can also run simulations with – I mean, these games are so – on the money and to the point now, you can actually run simulations of the games that are going to take place on Sunday and see
right.
how these routes are going to be run against certain defenses
right.
and certain defensive formations. I am a huge advocate of using these video games, and they're not video games really anymore. They're simulations
right.
of, especially in sports, especially UFC is another great one. Madden.
Yeah.
Madden, get it, and yes, play it, but really learn it. And once you learn it, in my opinion, and I might be off base here, you'll become a more knowledgeable football fan.
No,
so
there's
a
no
combination
no
of
question.
Watching tape, watching film, there's no substitution for that, and then I believe
that,
Madden.
That's where I got started, was making plays. Back when Madden had a play creator back in like 2000 or something, that's where I got started, was making plays and just got really into all the minutia of that. And that you're absolutely right. There are websites all over the internet that will explain route combinations to you. And like I said, once you understand those, the game changes for you. You'll see it differently, and you'll start to get a better understanding of what's going on during a game, and you'll have a better be able to better predict what's going to happen. So we're going to get into the last topic of the day, replays for pass interference. Sean Payton came out this yesterday or today, I can't remember which, and said that he thinks that they should expand instant replay to include pass interference. I want to know your take on that.
As livid as I've been multiple times this year, maybe it's not replay. Maybe we just need to get better refs. Replay is going to slow the game down so
yes.
much. How are you going to fit this in and it not affect the gameplay? You already see gameplay affected when you have to review for scoring plays, and now under 2 minutes it comes from the booth, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Pass interference is going to extend games at least by 30 minutes.
I think it's probably 20, but
20 to 30 minutes.
Yes.
That's a long time. It's very much like the replays in baseball that they ended up having to go to. Goal line technology in soccer, it's just a different... Pass interference is such a human error, human...
subjective.
It's definitely subjective.
It's kind of subjective.
It's like offsides in soccer, where... It's very similar.
Dude, nobody on earth understands offside and soccer. Please stop.
It's very similar. And you just have to have the referees and officials that are able to properly and accurately throw these flags.
I would be fine with 75% of the time.
How do you do
it? If they were right 75% of the time, but they're not.
They're not even close.
Right. And
it's the number one problem from a refereeing official standpoint
right.
that we have this year.
Let me add something real quick, and this is something I didn't really plan for, but what do you think about changing the pass interference rule to be like college, where it's 15 yards
no.
instead of a spot foul?
No, I don't like that at all. I get upset in college where I think that I'm getting the ball at the 2 or 5 or 10 or whatever it
right.
is, and I have to remember, son of a... Oh, 15 yards, and no, I think that changes a lot as I rip the headphones out of the,
jack.
I'm very emotional, I'm very,
right.
I think it changes a lot when you can't.
Well, but what about the argument from the other side that it,
I'm
that
all for it.
It put, no, hold on, the argument on the other side of what you're saying is that it puts way too much of the outcome of the game in the hands of a referee who makes a pass interference call, it wasn't actually pass interference, and now they have the ball on the 1 yard line.
We're not seeing those calls. We're seeing pass interference not get called.
We are saying that a lot. There have been some players in particular that I feel like get a bad rep and then they just call it all the time. Or in the case of Richard Sherman, who holds, grabs, pass interference on almost every snap, mm-hmm. he can basically tackle Julio Jones in midair and not get called. That was a ridiculous non-call this weekend from the Seattle game.
So what do you do? What is the answer? If you throw replays, it's so subjective. There's not 100% win here.
There's not. To me, if I was the commissioner of the NFL, I would tell the referees union to get bent, get out of here, and we're going to hire full-time referees. You have to understand, these referees that are refereeing these games on Sundays, they're lawyers and doctors and running businesses and stuff throughout the week, and then they referee on the weekends. That's how that works. It's complete BS. As much money as the NFL makes, they should have full-time referees. And if it was me, that would be the answer that I would go to. And I think it would increase the quality of the refereeing by several 100%, probably. Okay, guys, it's time for our Out of Bounds segment. This is where we talk a little bit about non-football stuff, stuff we like, stuff we dislike. Me, for like the new Rogue One trailer. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah?
You're not a Star Wars fan, are you? It's so beautiful. It brings tears to my eye.
Talk to me. Is that the new... I don't want to say. It sounds stupid, but I'm going to. Is that the new movie, or is that the video game?
It's the new movie.
Okay, new movie. I have not seen anything after Return. I haven't seen any of the new stuff, so I've got quite the catalog to go through.
I can get on board with you having not watched the prequels, okay? But as much as Force Awakens is basically just feminist propaganda in a lot of ways, it's really good, and it does set up the potential for really cool stories a little later on. It is kind of a rehash of A New Hope, the first Star Wars movie. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways, but I think that was done on purpose to kind of like reset it a little bit. I highly suggest Force Awakens. It's really good, and it has a lot of quality humor, like laugh-out-loud humor in it, which you don't get from a lot of Star Wars. My big dislike right now, it's a ridiculously long wait for Game of Thrones, man. I feel like I have a year to go still before I'm going to get to watch the next season of that show.
I don't know where you're at there, but I've been waiting for what feels like 2.5 years to see who Negan killed in Walking Dead, which we get that on Sunday.
Thank Christ.
As far as Game of Thrones goes, I've started it. It is... I've got such a journey ahead.
Oh, so you started it?
Oh, yes.
Where are you right now?
Very early. Season one.
Okay, can I give you a little bit of advice? And this is a little advice for anybody listening who's thinking about starting Game of Thrones.
Okay, before let me give you the prelogue to my Game of Thrones journey.
Okay,
and that is every single TV show that I am vehemently and adamantly against.
Uh-huh.
I love.
Yeah.
I mean, love. We did it with Lost, which that is arguably if not my favorite TV shows of all time. I've taken the journey on the island multiple times, to a lesser extent with Heroes, which that had
Heroes.
The first season was incredible.
Best first season in the history of television, my personal opinion.
Heroes was incredible first season. We can go with comedy, The Office. I hate it on any TV show that I'm a hater of,
so
I hate it on Walking Dead.
Basically, you try to hate on anything that's popular.
And
then you go watch it, you're like, it's popular, but it's really good.
There's a reason. Game of Thrones is really good.
Okay, let me give you a little advice on Game of Thrones. Like I said, the listener, if you're thinking about watching Game of Thrones, let me throw this out at you. They're going to throw a ridiculous number of names of people and places at you.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of characters. It's insane.
It seems like.
Keeping up with it is just, it's almost a chore.
Sure.
So what I did was I found a YouTuber who reviewed every single episode along the way, and he read the books, he knew all the content, and he doesn't do it in some long, hour-long.
I'm very curious to see who it is, because I think it might be the same one that reviews Walking Dead.
I bet you it is.
Is it Trev's?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's 8 to 10 minutes. Just talk about it a little bit, and hearing him say the names of those people while putting the picture of the people up in front of you, like over and over and over and over again over a long period of time, if you just watch one episode, then go watch his review, then go watch one episode, then go watch his review, it helps tremendously, and it will add so much to your Game of Thrones watching. His YouTube channel, the one that I watch, his YouTube channel is called Emergency Awesome.
Oh, I definitely have to check it out.
Check it out. And he does do Walking Dead and Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and just every damn show you can think of, pretty much has anything in nerd culture, he's got it. Guys, go check that out.
Very good show. And so yeah, you've got how long has it been?
Well, it ended in May, and Usually we get more at the end of April, beginning of May, like in that range. It's only 10-week season, so it's real short. Mm-hmm. But they needed a gloomy weather and type, you know, outside, like it needed to be kind of gloomy, and they had unseasonably nice weather where they were doing the recording, so they had to delay recording for a pretty substantial amount of time. It might be like July until we get more Game of Thrones. Like, it may be into the summer.
So what you're saying is winter is not here.
No.
And is nowhere close, no, apparently.
No. It makes me sad all day. All day, every day.
All day, every day.
All day, every
All right,
day.
Folks. Well, I've been waiting since about February or March or whenever the hell it was. Before that, if you're a fan of the Walking Dead comic graphic novel, then you know what's coming, as I do.
Right.
And I've been touting Negan and the Saviors for about the last 2.5 seasons. When we go over to my buddy Schmaus, one of my friends, and then we watch it as a group every Sunday.
Right.
They tell me to shut the hell up every single time because I'm the same. It's never the Saviors. It's finally the Saviors. They are about to introduce a character they already have. His name is Negan. You can learn the spoilers, which I have to say was probably be a good idea because you kind of know what's coming in the season premiere after Negan did what he did in the season finale. I'm sure you're aware of what has happened in the Walking Dead universe. He has a best friend slash favorite weapon named Lucille. It is a barbed wire baseball bat, or is a baseball bat lovingly wrapped with barbed wire.
Right.
And he is about to beat the hell out of one of our beloved characters in front of everyone, and they are going to show it. So you should probably have a bag, a bucket, some sort of holding device ready. I'm 100% prepared to throw up. It is the most graphic scene in the comic or graphic novel, period. It is a game changer completely, and the Saviors are nothing to mess around with. Negan is exactly like he portrays himself as. Jeffrey Dean Morgan doing a fantastic job playing that character. Even though he wouldn't have been my first pick, but he's done a great job up until this point. I think this new season is really going to put Walking Dead over the top. And if you're not watching the Walking Dead universe right now, they're going to run a marathon soon. I highly recommend you get on board. The season premiere is this Sunday, and I absolutely cannot wait. Basically, I can't wait to see one of my beloved characters get bashed in with a baseball bat lovingly wrapped in barbed wire. And it's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Going to be gruesome, folks. Gruesome.
All right, guys, we're out of time for the day. Be sure to check us out on Facebook.
I think now they know more about us as humans
nerds.
And people.
Huge
more,
nerds.
Yeah, exactly.
Be sure to check us out on Facebook. It's the 2-point conversion with the number 2. iTunes, Google Play, go check us out there. Like, rate, share, subscribe,
absolutely.
All that business.
Twitter, Facebook, Google Play, and iTunes. I was just inside my head. Folks, 200.8, first time this year. Very excited. On DraftKings.
Congratulations.
I cashed
on
the Wildcat. I was top 1,000 in the Millionaire Maker. I lost with the parlay, but the Dog of the Week won, and Dallas is the best team in the NFC.
Yep.
Very
yep.
exciting times in the NFL and DraftKings.
All right, guys. For Daniels, Simo, everybody here at the Lone Star Crew, I'm Bryce reminding you to always go for 2.